I want to invite you today to turn with me to the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah chapter 31. We're going to continue throughout this month of April, looking at when God says that He makes all things new and what some of those things are. We've looked at the extreme example of what it means to be made new on the inside, what it means to have old things passed away and all things in your life open up and become new. Today, I want us to look at this passage from Jeremiah, and I brought my New American Standard today just because I like the way that the chapter and the passage is worded here, and you'll still be able to follow along very well, but I like the way that he describes a person who's looking for answers and looking for those answers in new places. Sometimes looking for answers in new places is not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes it just doesn't work out quite so well. It all depends totally on where you're looking, right? It matters an awful lot what your questions are. And so when I come to this passage today, and I'm just going to take this, we're really going to focus on verse number 22 today, even though we'll look at just a few others in that passage. When I get to verse number 22, I notice really a couple of truths that really jump out at me, and those truths are so simple. But things that we do need to keep in mind when we talk about having these kinds of questions, whether these questions have to do with love or with finances or relationships or direction or whatever they might be. The first thing is this: asking wrong questions from the wrong source generates wrong answers. I mean, that's pretty simple, isn't it? I mean, that's something that we ought to know up in our head, but we still do it. When you ask the wrong question to the wrong person, they're always going to give you the wrong answer. Always. And I know that there are times when you look for help and you want to go to Barnes & Noble or you want to go to Lifeway, and sometimes there's not a whole lot of difference between the two, and you want to look for the latest self-help kind of book. And the problem is that this is a new publication, and you just got finished with the last self-help book, which was the newest thing, and now you trade that in for the next newest thing, and when that one's over with, you'll still look for the next newest thing. And the reason is because we never find those answers that we're really looking for. When you go to the wrong kinds of sources, you're never going to find the answers that really impact your life, the answers that you're really looking for that will sustain you. I want you to notice something here with me in this 22nd verse. God Himself begins with the question, and He asks this: how long will you go here and there? How long will you go to this place and go to that place? How long will you go here and there, thither and yonder? How long will, if you're reading from that New King James, how long will you gad about? The implication here is, how much longer will you do that? You see, implied in that fact, how long will you go here and there, is that they are already going here and there. They're already searching all of these other places. And so when I look at the characteristics of a person who asked the wrong question to the wrong person, getting them for themselves the wrong answer, the first thing that I notice about these people is that they search. They search. They're simply searching, and they're searching anywhere they can find. They're going here, and they're going there. The idea about gadding about is an idea that you're wandering, that you're aimless, that you're not finding what you're looking for. You go to the east and you don't find what you're looking for. So you turn to the west and you don't find what you're looking for. You head north and you don't find what you're looking for. You head south and you don't know what you're looking for. You don't find those answers that really satisfy the depths of your soul. And so like a pinball machine, you just bounce from pin to pin until finally your life is in tilt. You don't know what you're looking for because you can't find those right kind of answers. When I was in college, I, like most people that are in college, begin to wonder, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? You know, I was in college getting an art degree. What am I going to do with an art degree? What am I going to do for the rest of my life? Go sell paintings at Holiday Inn with the rest of the starving artists? You know, what am I going to do? What does God want me to do? I'm looking for some kind of an answer that, one, will give me a career. Secondly, will give me enough money to be able to live. You know, thirdly, some kind of career that I'm really going to enjoy somewhere along the way. I'm asking the wrong question. My question should not have been, what kind of career should I have? What kind of career will generate dollars? What kind of career will give me a sense of satisfaction? My question should have been, God, what do you want me to do? And so I don't go to the Lord looking for my answers. Instead, I go to my faculty advisor. This is something I'm interested in. What do you think I should do? And then I go to my parents. What do you think I should do? And then I go to my friends. What do you think I should do? And suddenly now I've got three different answers. Folks that are not giving me real answers, the kind of answers that I need for the rest of my life, I'm finding answers that are wrong. Why? Because I've asked the wrong question. I've asked them of the wrong sources. And I find myself searching like a person in the desert who's looking for water, and all he finds are illusions. These people search. And God's asking the question. He's asking it of them. He may be asking this question of you. How much longer? How much longer are you going to keep looking for answers in the wrong places? How much longer are you going to search? There's another characteristic of them, and I think it is absolutely due to their searching that we find not only do they search, but they stray. They stray. You see, they'll go to one person, or they'll go to one self-help book, or they'll go to one TV show, or they'll go to one psychologist. They'll go to somebody who they think can help them and can give them an answer. And when they give them an answer, even if it's not the right one, it may take them down a path. More folks have found themselves in a cult that they cannot get out of because they've gone looking for some kind of an answer to the meaning of life, and they've sought it outside of the person of the one true living God, and they've gotten hooked in falsehood and untruth. We find that they stray. Would you notice in verse number 22 how God describes these people? How long will you go here and there, O faithless daughter? O faithless daughter. He's talking about their straying. You know that throughout the Bible, both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, when God talks about a person or a group of people who go in search of answers outside of Him, they go and search them from some other god, or they go and search in some kind of ism, some kind of theory. God refers to that as spiritual immorality. In the very verse just before this, in verse number 21, would you look back to that verse and notice how He describes His people? He describes them there the same way that He will describe them three times in this book, twice in this chapter. He will describe them as the virgin of Israel. That's His desire for them. That's His plan for them. That's His plan for you, that you are pure in your life, in every aspect of your life. That you're pure in your relationship with God, that you're pure in your thoughts, that you're pure in your actions, that you're pure in your religion, that you're pure in everything. And yet, do you get to verse number 22? Just one more verse. Right after He describes them as wishing that they were the virgin of Israel, and now He says, I'm talking to you, faithless daughter. Faithless. Person who strays. You get the idea about why God uses that analogy by looking at a person, especially, you know, we say that it's always the men, but a man who goes in search of love from a person who's not his wife. He's looking for her to give him something that his wife cannot give or will not give. And he strays. And oftentimes when he strays in one direction, he'll stray again in another direction. And when he strays here, and he strays there, and he's still searching for those answers about love and about fulfillment and about respect, he's not going to find them in any of those stops. None. And so maybe he stops with the other women, and he goes simply to the idea of them. He gets lost in a cyber world that will just as much shackle him as anybody else. People who look for the wrong kinds of questions from the wrong kinds of places, God says they search and they stray. And here's the big result that just is implied in this question. They aren't satisfied. They're not. The Rolling Stones becomes their theme group. Hey, you can get no satisfaction. You know why you can't get no satisfaction? In the midst of that song, there's a great lyric in that song where he says, "And I, 'cause I try, and I try, and I try, and I try." That sounds exactly like this person, doesn't it? I'm asking the right questions. I want to know what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to know where love is. I want to know how to spend my finances. I want to know where to find happiness. I want to know where to find meaning. I want to know where to find purpose. But because they're searching in directions that are not God, because they're straying to others, they're never going to be satisfied. The emptiness that was there that generated the question in the first place will still be the emptiness that's there in their own heart. There's so many people who come to a point to where they're just not satisfied in their religious life. They feel like God has let them down because they're not really searching for Him. They're looking for Him to give some kind of blessing. They're looking for Him to give them some kind of reward. They're looking for Him to do something, but they're really not looking for Him. You know, Saul of Tarsus, when he gets saved, begins to change his tune, doesn't he? And he meets the Lord. And when he meets the Lord, he asks the Lord this question, "What will you have me to do? Lord, what will you have me to do?" If that question is directed to the Lord, then Saul of Tarsus can find the right answer. But if that question is asked of anybody else, it's going to generate the wrong answers. So I'd say your second simple truth is just as simple as the first. Asking the right question from the right source generates right answers. God's not going to lead you astray. God's not dangling a carrot out there in front of you trying to get you to follow along blindly so that He can trick you and laugh at you at the end of your life. He wants genuinely to lead you like a shepherd leads his sheep. He wants to genuinely provide for you like a shepherd provides for his sheep. He wants to genuinely do for you like a shepherd does for his sheep. So for Saul of Tarsus to have the question, "What should I do?" he asked it of the right person. "What will you have me to do, God?" Listen, the essence of your questions is not the end result. You know, where to find happiness, where to find the finances, where to find love in a relationship, where to find all of those things. If those end results are the beginning point or the motivation of your question, then you're heading about those things wrongly. The right way, the right motivation, is that you begin with God. That's why in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you." What are these things? In the context, these things are all of the necessities of life. Everything that you need, everything that you need, God will provide for you. You seek Him and He'll take care of everything else. It's about seeking the face of God. So I want you to notice something here with me. The characteristics of those who ask the right questions of the right source, which is God, who are gaining for themselves the right answers. Notice what they discover. First of all, they find the Creator. They find the Creator. Look there in verse number 22. When he asked the question, "How long will you go here and there, O faithless daughter?" Notice where he directs their attention. For the Lord. For the Lord. Is your translation like mine? Is the word Lord in all capital letters? Mine is. You have a lot of translations that will do that. And the reason that they do that and they set that word apart from every other one, it's not that there's not different words for Lord. You'll see the word Lord in lowercase. But this one is the covenant name of God. Do you remember when God called to Moses and said, "I want you to go and deliver my people. I want you to go and tell them to come and worship me." And Moses said, who am I going to say who's sending me? Who's calling them? And God says, "You tell them I am who I am. You tell them I am has sent you." The I am is the covenant name of God. It's Yahweh. Some people pronounce it Jehovah. That's who it is. There's nobody like him. He is the one true living God. And notice what it says about him. This one who is distinct above all others. There's no other God like him. This is not Allah. This is not a Buddha. This is not any of the countless number of Hindu gods. This is the Lord, Yahweh. For the Lord has created a new thing in the earth. That word for created is the same word that you have in Genesis 1:1, bara. When it says the Lord created the heavens and the earth, it means that He created them out of nothing. He didn't begin with clay and sculpt something. He didn't begin with Play-Doh, you know, and press it down, or silly putty and press it down on the newspaper and get an imprint. That's not how He created. He created them out of nothing. He created them out of just simply speaking the worlds into existence. He spoke and they were. It's the same word that's used here. The Lord is the Creator, the one who makes all things new. Do you notice what He said there? For the Lord has created a new thing in all of the earth. I mentioned to you last week that that idea about new and created is redundant. And you see it right here again, don't you? He's created a new thing. The new, again, is the word for new when something has never existed before. He's not interested in making a better version of you. He's interested in making you who He created you to be in the first place. God created you with purpose. So if you want to ask a question about purpose, don't ask Siri. She doesn't know. Ask God. He created you for that purpose. If you want to know about love, don't ask somebody whose love is flaky. Ask God who loves you with an everlasting love. If you want to know about relationships, to have a marriage that's made in heaven, ask the one who rules heaven. If you want to know about answers about your finances, the one who owns the cattle on 1,000 hills is the one who can tell you about those things. The Creator God, who makes all things new, who has created a new thing, and that new thing is you in relationship with you. He has the answers. So when you go and search, what you find may not be exactly the answer that you're looking for. That's why people get bogged down in their prayers. They don't get the answer that they're looking for. It's not the answer that I'm looking for, it's God that I'm looking for. When I find God, then I found enough. When I find God, my question might change. When I find God, then my expectation of the answer might change. So you find the Creator. And then as you search Him, you find the covenant. The covenant. Listen, it's not a mistake that Jeremiah uses the covenant name of God. Especially in this context when he says, "For the Lord has created a new thing in the earth." Would you skip forward with me down to verse number 31? Jeremiah is the prophet who introduces the idea of a new covenant. The new covenant is Christ coming. It's the Messiah who's coming. Notice what he says about this. "Behold, days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not like the covenant which I made with their fathers in the day I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant which they broke, although I was a husband to them, declares the Lord." Let me stop there for just a moment. Why is the new covenant not like the old covenant? Why is the covenant of the Messiah, the covenant of Christ, not like the covenant of Him bringing them out of bondage in Egypt? Because bringing them out of bondage in Egypt required something of them. They were to do. Did you notice this in this passage? What did they do? They broke the covenant. They didn't do their part. So you know what God does in the new covenant? He does all the parts. He does it all. There's not one thing He's asking for you to do to be saved. Nothing. He's asking for you to believe in Him and trust Him, but He's not asking you to go to church, to get baptized, to give your money, to read your Bible, to do any of those things. He's not asking you to do any of that. He's done everything that's necessary to bring you into a right relationship with Himself. So He says the new one is not like the old one. And notice what the result is. Verse number 33. "But this is the covenant which I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my law within them." Not oppress them, not give them 10 commandments, not put the law on them. "I will put my law in them. I will put my law within them, and on their heart I will write it, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people, and they shall not teach again each man his neighbor and each man his brother, saying, 'Know the Lord,' for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and their sin I will remember no more." That's the covenant that we have with God. When I search Him for all of my answers, I find Him. And in finding Him, I find the covenant with Him. I find the agreement with Him. I find the relationship with Him, which is Christ in me. That's what I discover. Man, that changes my whole perspective on things. And then there's one other characteristic. If you go back there to verse number 22, verse number 22 ends in such a strange way. He says, "For the Lord has created a new thing in the earth." And he says, this is it. "A woman will encompass a man." What in the world does that mean? Well, I tell you what, if you read five different commentaries, you're going to find five different answers to that question. So am I saying I know exactly what that is? No, I'm not saying. But I agree with W.A. Criswell, and I think it fits this pattern here. This is what Criswell said about this. Encompass, the word encompass, is used here in the sense of faithful, encompassing love, one which indicates clinging to an object. And then he cites Genesis 2:24, where it says, "For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife." He uses that as an example, and then he says this. Israel, the woman or the virgin from verse 21, will encompass her divine bridegroom and cling to him. So the characteristics are this. I'll find the Creator. I'll find the covenant with Him. And then I'll find a clinging to Him. This "a woman will encompass a man" is that reflection of the fact that this virgin of Israel will be reinstated from verse number 21. And she will no longer be the faithless daughter that's at the beginning of verse number 22. Instead, this faithless daughter's coming home. And when she comes home, she's going to cling to Him and encompass Him. In the same way that His love has enveloped her, her love is going to be for Him and for Him alone. That's the new thing that God's doing. He's bringing His people into relationship with Him, into a love relationship with Him that cannot ever be broken. So you want to find answers? You go to the Lord. You find those things from Him. You don't go to every latest self-help whatever. They're only going to generate wrong answers. You go to the Lord and you'll discover the Lord. And then He will share with you, what is the next step? How do you do the next thing? Where do you go from here? What do you do about these relationships? He will give you those answers. The Bible says that inside of these scriptures contains everything that you need for life and to live a godly life. Everything, every answer to every question is found in here. So here's my first question, looking at this passage today. How? How do I do that? How do I stop trusting in all of these other voices that are coming at me? And how do I focus on the Lord? How do I listen to Him? I think right here in this context is your formula. Look at it. Go back a verse with me. Go to verse number 21. There you're going to find five imperatives, five things, not options, five imperatives, five commands, five things that you must do. Set up, place, direct, and then the last two are the same, are return. Return and return. What are you going to do? You return. You return to the Lord. Well, Tim, I don't really know what that means. I don't know how to get back. Remember Hansel and Gretel laying out the crumbs so they can find their way back? Look what he says. Set up for yourself road marks. Place for yourself guideposts. Direct your mind to the highway, the way by which you went. Returning to the Lord is going back the way that you got away. You remember the story of Elisha? And he's there at the school of the prophets, and they're trying to build a house. They're trying to build a dormitory for the prophets. And as they're building that dormitory, they're chopping down trees, and there's one man who's out there, and he's got an axe, and the axe head comes flying off of the axe handle and goes into the water. You remember this story? He goes to the prophet Elijah and says, Elijah, the axe head is in the water, and it's not mine. The axe head was borrowed. Do you remember what Elisha said to him? He said, show me where the axe head fell in. You've got to go back to where you got off track. You got to go back to where you got off track. I know there's a desire in your heart to simply say, well, I just want to return to the Lord. I know I've been backslidden. I know that I have, you know, I know that I've been the faithless daughter. But I want to be back. You know, I want to be like Star Trek, and I just want to get in that thing. I want to be beamed over to the Lord. It's not the way it works. You've got to go back. So maybe you need to get before the Lord and say, God, where did I go wrong? Where was it that I messed up? You know, was it when I began to click on those little options that came up on my computer? Is that where it was? Was it back when I shared shared that life story, that life detail with my coworker? Where was it? Was it when my friend dared me to take this, drink this, shoot this, swallow this? Where did you get off track? Find the road marks and go back. You've got to return. And then secondly, you have to be restored. Notice I say you have to be restored. Not to restore yourself. He has to restore you. And if you will return to Him, He will restore you. Notice what He says here in these verses. He says, "Oh, return, O virgin of Israel, return to these your cities." You can go back. You can be innocent again. You can be right in your relationship with God one more time. Go back a few verses with me. Go back to verse number 18. At the end of that verse, he says this, "Bring me back that I may be restored, for thou art the Lord my God." God, I'm returning. I'm returning to you. Bring me back. Bring me back. Why? So that I may be restored. People will find themselves, after searching for their wrong answers in wrong places, having strayed in so many relationships. Maybe they've lost their job. Maybe they've lost their family. Maybe they've lost so many other things. And when they talk about being restored, they want their family back. When they talk about being restored, they want their job back. You don't get to just walk right back in, do you? You don't get to just simply say, "Hey, I'm back. I'm here. I've set things right." No, God has to restore you. God can restore your family the same way that He restored Job's. God can restore your job the same way that He restored Paul's. He can restore anything that is broken and lost in your life, even though it may greatly change based on the will of God. But if you will return to Him, He will restore you. And then thirdly, is to be rewarded by the Lord. Wednesday night, we looked at a middle part of verse number 16. "For your work will be rewarded, declares the Lord." You saw that last week, didn't you? You got to see the fact that God rewarded your work. You worked diligently and He came through. Listen, if He can come through in that area, He can come through in every area. If you'll be faithful to the things that God has called you to do, to be faithful to the person that God has called you to be, He will reward that as well. He will reward your faithfulness. He will reward your efforts. He will reward those prayers. And you let Him do that. You don't have to manipulate that. And He'll do more for you than you could ever imagine. Sometimes Jeremiah chapter 31 is referred to as the "I will" chapter. We certainly don't have time to look at them all, because there's a bunch. But let's take a tour for a moment. Go back with me to verse number 3. Technically, this one isn't an "I will," but it fits. He says in verse number 3, "I have loved you with an everlasting love." Because it's everlasting tells me that not only has He loved you in the past, He's going to love you in the future. I stick it in the "I will" category because He's still going to love you. You think that you've done something to get outside of the love of God? You haven't. He says, "I have loved you with an everlasting love." Look at these "I wills." Look at verse number 1. He says, "I will be the God of all the families of Israel, and they shall be my people." You think you're excluded from Him? You're not. Look at verse number 4. "I will build you, and you shall be rebuilt." He can restore anything that's broken in your life. Look down to verse number 9. He says, I will lead them. I will make them walk by streams of waters. You want God's leadership and direction in your life? He says, I will lead you. If you'll trust Him, if you'll look to Him, if you'll ask Him your right questions, He says, I will lead you and let you walk by streams of waters. Look in verse number 13. I will turn their mourning into joy, and I will comfort them and give them joy for sorrow. You think you're at the end, you're not. He says that He can turn that. Look in verse number 20. He says, my heart yearns for Him. Don't you like that? His heart yearns for you. He says, I will surely have mercy on him, declares the Lord. He will give you mercy. And more than that, we looked at this one a moment ago, but I can't help going back to it in verse number 34. I will forgive their iniquity, and their sin I will remember no more. These are rewards that come from the Lord. Rewards for those who will look to the Lord and trust Him in every area of their life. Let me ask you to bow your head and close your eyes. What is the biggest question that you have on your mind today? Is it a question that matters? Sometimes our mind are filled with questions that don't even matter. But if you could stand before God and ask Him any one thing, what would you ask Him?